Hello to all my hard-partying symphony musicians. It's Beautiful Anonymous. 1 hour, one phone call, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
Hi, everybody. Chris Gethard here. Thanks so much for listening to Beautiful Anonymous. Thanks to everybody who checked out the Half My Life special. It's been very cool to see feedback. If you want to go check it out, international listeners, it's on Vimeo. That's where you can get it if you're not in the States. Amazon, iTunes, if you are, YouTube. And it's a couple bucks, but it helps support me. And thanks to everybody who's been enjoying it. And especially, you know, it dovetails into I'm going on tour again. And there's a bunch of Beautiful Anonymous live dates happening, and people have been buying those tickets. All the dates are at chrisgeth.com, and I am so thrilled I get to meet a lot of people out there once again, starting up July, Binghamton, our first show, going all the way through the end of the year, where I got a couple Ohio dates and many, many places in between. Check chrisgeth.com to see if I'm visiting you for either some stand-up or a live Beautiful Anonymous taping. Okay. This week's show, funny enough, deals with another person who's getting a performing career up and running. This is the real Mrs. Maisel. Her friends call her that. You're going to hear, this is somebody who has lived some life, has been through some tumultuous times, has started really focusing in on how to point things in a direction that feels a little more streamlined, safe, comfortable. And it's leading to a situation where people in her life are calling her the real Mrs. Maisel. It's a really good talk. It reminds me a lot of why I've always enjoyed pursuing creativity, being a creative person, why creativity gives something to your life, especially when you're someone who maybe has some predilections towards addiction or letting things sort of get chaotic or embracing that chaos. Reminded me of myself in so many ways, and I'm rooting for this caller hard. Caller also followed up after the call and wanted us to just say, disclaimer, caller wants everybody to know that COVID-19 safety protocols were followed. Said specifically, as I live alone, I was allowed to designate one contact, and the two men I talk about were my pandemic contacts at the time. It was more than 2 weeks of isolation between me dating them. So caller wants just everybody out there to know, hey, doing things the smart and safe way, following the rules, following the laws of my province. So that's on record. And another thing that's on record, you're about to learn, is that this caller has a very, very compelling story. Very compelling person. Enjoy the call.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous. A beeping noise will indicate when you are on the show with the host.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Let's see. I feel good. I woke up feeling very positive today. For some reason, I've had some anxiety lately, and then today I woke up and felt like, all right, I'm kind of back in my... I'm back in a good headspace. All right.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I woke up feeling good today, too. I'm so excited to be talking to you. I'm wearing lipstick and I shaved my legs for this phone call. I realize you can't see me, but, you know, there we are.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you are aware that this is an audio medium, but it sounds like we're on the same
page. I am.
You just wanted to get into your confidence place.
Exactly.
Gotcha. That may be the earliest I've ever thrown my glasses in the history of the show. It's less than a minute.
Oh my gosh, I was hoping for that.
Yeah, you got a glasses throw, and it was less than a minute in as I laughed at the idea of no one has ever informed me about shaving their legs in prep for the phone call before, so. You earned it.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hold that title. I want that on my tombstone.
Really? No, I think there's better things. I promise. There's better things.
Hopefully. I had a feeling that you're going to be throwing your glasses a whole bunch over the course of the next hour, but I'm glad we got the first one out of the way.
Okay. Okay. Good tease. I'm intrigued.
Okay. So there are a couple different avenues this phone call can take. Okay. I have not given myself this title, but I have been referred to as a real life Mrs. Maisel because I started doing stand-up comedy after I left the man I thought I was going to marry in Canada, which is just, you know, adds a whole level of hilarity. I am almost 4 months sober. I'm a week away from being 4 months sober off of booze. Mm-hmm. And I just found out my 42-year-old not boyfriend, even though he essentially was living with me, was cheating on me. So there's lots of different ways we can go this morning.
Wow. Okay. Well, where would you want to start?
I kind of wanted to talk with you about your experience, because I know that you don't drink.
Yes. And congrats on being, congrats on the 4 months, by the way.
Thank you. It's been really, really, really hard. So, I mean, like, we could start there. I have a lot of, you know, really hilarious but horrific drunk stories. Well, I mean, I guess maybe we should start with comedy, because that's kind of how my drinking problem reared its ugly head.
I've heard this story before. As a comedian, it's not uncommon, sadly enough.
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay, I might be like really Canadian during this call. Like, I feel so uncomfortable just talking about myself. So I might ask you a lot of questions. So okay. when you stopped drinking, did you, like, were you doing comedy?
Yeah, but I was very young and just starting out. I was 21 when I quit drinking.
Wow.
I hadn't even graduated college yet. And
good for you.
Yeah, I didn't drink for many years in my life. I think I first had a drink my senior year of high school towards the second half of that year. And I quit before I was done with my senior year of college. I just, I've said before, I don't know that I've ever been drunk, because I've only ever been drunk. I was one of those drinkers. Like,
oh, no, yeah.
No, just having a drink or two to chill out. So I had started going into New York City to take classes at the UCV, and I was doing some shows there, and I'd hang out. And I remember being very excited my first year in the city, because at that era, a lot of New York City bars could not care less about carding for underage people. And I'd drink with my friends afterwards, and I felt very hip, very bohemian. But yeah, I knew how it hit me, and it brought out a lot of emotional problems. And you know, sadly enough, I've seen enough examples in my own family and heard about enough things in my own family's past that I said, okay, I see which way this is going. So that's where I was at. But yeah, the comedy scene was definitely like, oh, hang out with a bunch of other artists and we go do shows and then grab a drink afterwards and talk a bunch of crap and talk about how good the show was or how bad the show was. Like, there's romance to it for sure.
Oh, totally. And it's like, yeah, it kind of like becomes your hobby is like drinking. But yeah, that gives me hope, because obviously from the pandemic, I haven't been able, you know, I'm not at open mics all the time. I've done a couple of Zoom shows since getting sober, which I hate. Well, I love, yeah, and I hate them, because I'm excited to be doing comedy, but it's so weird. But yeah, that gives me hope, because I'm really nervous about going back into the scene sober. But someone in my AA group gave me the nickname of Maisel, and I cherish it a little bit.
And why Maisel? Is it just because you do stand up and because that's a show right now, or do you have more in common with Mrs. Maisel?
I think it's because I'm a lady comedian. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the reason I started doing it was because I left, I guess, fiance, we were planning on eloping. And then I felt so just like totally lost after I left him, because I kind of had let our relationship become my whole identity. Like, I met him when I was pretty young. I was 22. I was working at a Starbucks and he was one of my regulars. So I gave him free coffee like every single day for 2 years. And then when I stopped giving him coffee, he didn't even bat an eye. He's like, oh, thank you, invisible barista girl. And then when I stopped giving him free coffee, is when he noticed me and then he finally asked me out. So we had a really good meet cute. But he was older. Like, I was a barista. I was making, you know, like maybe $12,000 a year. And he was kind of a higher up at a pretty big company. And he was pretty young. He was like 28 when we met, but, he was making probably like $90,000 a year. So all of a sudden, I kind of had like a sugar daddy, an accidental sugar daddy situation. We moved in really quick. When we were together, I graduated college. So I got a federal government job, which was absolutely soul sucking. And I was on this birth control that was making me really depressed. And I didn't realize it because I got on it when I was 18. And I was like, oh, this is just what adulthood feels like. Everyone is just as sad as I am. And this is just being a grown up. I did it. But I had to go off of this birth control because I saw this female doctor who looked at my chart. I asked her for a refill. And she looked at my chart and she was like, oh, you get migraines with Aura. Why are you taking this birth control? You're at super high risk of having a stroke. And I was like, what? So I had to go off it cold turkey. And then a couple weeks later, I felt like I woke up and I had a personality again. And I left my federal government job. I started working for the symphony in my city as their marketing person. And I suddenly had all these like cool new artsy friends. And like, I was kind of a child actor. So I really missed being in this artsy kind of world. And my ex, I mean, I do feel kind of bad for him because I probably changed on a complete dime. But he was, you know, he was pretty controlling. We always did what he wanted to do. We never hung out with my friends. We only hung out with his friends. And he was like, I just feel so out of place with your friends. And I was like, do you think I feel comfortable in a room full of people talking about supply chain management? Like, no. But after we broke up, I was just kind of like scattered and flailing. And so I went to an open mic and I just kind of couldn't stop going. It really became my community. And between classical musicians, I moved into a house that I affectionately call the Marijuana Mansion with two members of the symphony. And like classical musicians party and comedians party. So I was kind of doomed.
Classical musicians party?
Oh my God. Yes. Oh yeah. Like, yeah, like after they'd play, usually like on Saturday nights, they'd play Friday, Saturday. They would all come to the Marijuana Mansion. It was this huge, beautiful house. I was living in the basement. But I partied there before I moved in, and they'd have these parties and it was great. Everyone was, you know, pretty drunk, pretty, you know, on whatever. The musicians I was living with, they love the like music festival scene. So even though, like, which is hilarious, you know, they have master's degrees in classical music performance, but that they just go rave and like listen to whoever, and it's awesome.
I guess that's the thing you don't think about. I bet I'm not the only one who goes like, well, yeah, if you're a professional viola player, that must mean that you're a very serious person and you're connected with sort of a high society art scene. But then you're probably like, no, that's also probably just a day gig for a lot of people. And they want to go like to Bonner. They want to go to like a festival and take MDMA and watch MGMT. Like there's probably, they're just other human beings. And they also have another artist, right? It's closed-minded to me because it's like, oh yeah, you work really hard to get an opportunity, but then you're also working like a few focused hours a night and then you get to kind of sleep in, which means you get to stay up late.
Exactly.
Makes sense. Who knew that cello players throw down? They throw down.
Case of the cellos, you know, it's kind of like it's touch and go. Some of them throw down, but some of them are pretty serious. Violins, absolutely not. They are very serious. Violas, you know, they're kind of the butt of the joke all the time. So like some of them party, some of them don't. But the bass players and the percussionists, that's who you party with. If you ever find yourself hanging out with symphony musicians and you want to party, which it sounds like our partying days are behind both of us.
No, this is a guide for the people who can handle their stuff a little better than you and I could, it sounds like. So it's the percussionists and the bass players.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And the conductors will too, but not as much. Like, it's very selective, but when the conductor shows up, it's game over, really.
Wow. Little known fact about me, I can play cello. Who knew?
Whoa.
Yeah, it's weird. I haven't played. I played through my whole childhood and then stopped when I was around 15, 16. And then I once stayed at a friend's family's house and his mom played cello and she had it all set up. And I was like, can I see if I still know how to play? And I sat down, I played it, read music, was able to just sit there and play to the music. I was like, oh, all right, cool. Turns out I might be a cello virtuoso and I just wasted that talent. Maybe that should be my midlife crisis. Maybe my midlife crisis should be getting back into cello and embracing the party scene that percussionists are a big part of.
Exactly. Absolutely. Mm. You should. Mm. I love the cello. Is my favorite instrument. I love it so much.
I enjoy it.
I never played.
I do think about, I have, I would say within recent months, I have looked up used cellos in New Jersey because I miss it. I do think it's cool that I know how to do it. And then I also think my wife's a musician and I think that my son growing up around music's a good thing. And I'm like, oh, if I'm playing a thing too, maybe that would be, get his gears turned. Anyway, so you break up with the fiance.
Yeah.
You are living in the marijuana mansion. You're partying with percussionists. And at what point does this lead to you getting on stage for the first time?
Okay, so this is kind of we're going to backpedal a little bit. I'm still with my ex, who I will refer to as Redacted. Okay. For the duration of this phone call.
Got it.
So I'm still with Redacted. We are very unhappy. He's like, who is she? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm having a crisis. And there was this very sexy composer who was in town.
Oh boy.
And I know.
Did he have shoulder length hair? Did he have long hair?
He did have long hair.
I knew it.
He did.
I knew it. Sexy composer, shoulder like hair.
It's a requirement, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So part of my job as the marketing person, the thing about working in nonprofit is you have to do everything. So I was writing ads for the symphony and doing all of that. But I also had to take around our guest artists to interviews. So sometimes that meant I would wake up in a pool of my own vomit on my bathroom floor with my cat staring at me with judgment in his face. And then I'd have to clean up and then take around a world-class violinist to morning radio shows and just be why am I doing this? That was what my life was. But anyway, so sexy composer, I was taking him around to a lot of media. And we were flirting pretty hard, but I was I mentioned my Redacted. I was up front, but we were still flirting and it was still really fun. He was in town for this festival. And on the last night of the festival, I got really drunk. What else is new? And I was just flirting with him a bunch. And then my ex summoned me home, which he often did, which drove me nuts. So I just was like, okay, bye. Can you bleep that? I'm so sorry.
No, bleep it. It's okay. Nobody needs to know anybody's name around here.
Okay, sounds good. So I was like, okay, bye. See you when you're back in town in March. I thought that was it. But the next day he texts me and he's like, hey, how are you feeling? And I was like, oh my God, I made such an ass of myself. And I was like, I'm feeling great. How are you? And he's like, I'm good. I was thinking about getting a drink tonight around 11. Do you want to come with me? And so I kind of thought that the percussionist would be present. I thought there'd be other people there. So I was like, yeah, I'll come with you. Totally. No problem. But it was just me and him. And so I'm sitting with this artistic person who he was living the kind of life that I really wanted to live. But I was too scared to, because I was afraid of what my family would think. I was afraid of what my partner at the time would think. But we were in this little comedy club that was really close to the symphony.
And those lights are reflecting off his impressive locks.
Exactly. And we're chatting, and I, for the first time in a really long time, I felt pretty and I felt noticed and I felt like very smart. And then he was like, "You're really funny. Did you know that?" And I was like, "Yeah, I kind of knew that." And he was like, "Well, I mean, there was just comedy here." Because after comedy ends at this club, which is now pretty much become my second home, he's like, "Well, I mean, what if you did comedy the next time I come into town, and I'm going to come see you, so you have to do it."
That's awesome.
And I was like, "What?" It was awesome.
That's cool.
It was really cool. And I was like, "Yeah, maybe I can do comedy. Like, I used to be an actor. I've performed before. Yeah, like, I'm gonna do it." And then we, like, kept talking. And then he was like, "Are you and your partner in an open relationship?" And I was like, "No, but I really wish we were, because it's been months with nothing." And then we ended up, like, making out. And I felt so horrible about it. So I went home. Like, we didn't do sex to each other. But, like, there was making out in a bathroom.
To each other?
Yeah, we didn't do sex to each other.
Is that how they phrase that in Canada?
That's Canadian slang. No, this is something I say. Because okay. I'm like still a little bit squeamish talking about this stuff, even though I talk about it on stage all the time now. But anyways, I went home. I felt so horrible. I woke up redacted and I was like, "Hey, I just made out with composer. I'm so sorry. I feel horrible." And he was like, "Oh, I don't really care." And he, like, rolled over and went back to sleep.
Well, that's a great place to pause. That's a bomb. I didn't see many sides of that coming. We'll be right back. Thank you to our advertisers for making this show happen. Now let's get back to that sexy composer.
I went home. I felt so horrible. I woke up redacted and I was like, "Hey, I just made out with composer. I'm so sorry. I feel horrible." And he was like, "Oh, I don't really care." And he, like, rolled over and went back to sleep. And I was like, "What?" Like, my partner, who I live with, who I've built a home with, who is essentially my family at this point, like, just really doesn't care that I was, like, making out in a bathroom with this very sexy composer man. And I was like, "Wow." And I, like, in the morning, I kind of brought it up. I was like, "Do you remember me coming home?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah." And I was like, "Okay." So, you know, then that kind of led to a discussion. I was like, "You know, I'm frustrated that we haven't, like,
done sex it. To each other."
Yeah, we haven't done sex to each other. And, like, you know, by that point, I just didn't really want to, because I, like, he had these horrible friends. So my ex was Francophone. So he's French. Mm-hmm. I'm not. I mm-hmm. can understand it. I can speak a little bit of it, but I'm not fluent. And he had all of these other Franco friends who would, you know, he'd invite them over for these dinner parties and he'd spend like $80 on a cheese board for them. Meanwhile, he would, like, make me craft dinner and he'd be like, "There you go. I love you." And I'd be like, "Oh, wow, thanks." So he'd, like, go all out for these friends and they really didn't like me because they just kind of thought I was, like, this young, stupid barista girl. So they would speak French in front of me, fully knowing I don't know what's happening. And I'd say to my ex, I'd be like, "Can you, like, maybe just speak English back to them and be like, 'Hey, can't participate.'" Like, one of his friends,
Hold on a second. We're going to bleep your name. You slipped up. You said your name.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I got your back. So you're asking this guy to, I had a question. I'm going to make a joke. You're a comedian. I can make jokes. Do you feel like part of why you're redacted was not into sex, like, was there ever part of him that was like, "Hey, it's just that you refer to it as doing sex, and then I can't stop thinking about that when we're leading up to it, and I just get uncomfortable or start giggling at the phrase 'doing sex to each other'? So I'm so sorry, but that's what it's about." Je suis désolé.
Je suis désolé. And I'm like, pourquoi? Do sex to me. And he was like, no, that's enough.
Stop saying doing sex. It's going to lead to the downfall of everything. Please stop saying doing sex to each other. Please.
Okay, so I shouldn't adopt it like now in my life. I should just cut that phrase.
Well, now you're a comedian and you're hanging out with other artists. So now you can just say strange things all the time.
Exactly. Oh man. I'm also so sorry for like spilling names. You're so easy to talk to. And I feel like I'm talking to a friend. So I'm just like,
the Canadian comedy scene, I've long had an infatuation with it and I've always clicked with the people up there. And I actually have some people who, it's that weird thing at comedy when you travel and you go to a city and you try to meet up with the same people and you're friends, but you might only see each other once every 2 or 3 years. And there's a lot of Canadian comics who I hugely admire, and it makes sense to me that we would click. And I know that there are a lot of comedy clubs that are also bars, including one of my favorite venues in the world, the Comedy Bar in Toronto.
Oh, I love Comedy Bar.
How's that place doing? Are they surviving the pandemic?
So I'm not in Toronto, but from what I've heard from my friends who are, they reopened for a bit when things kind of looked better. I think they're still around, but like the Ossington closed, I do think Comedy Bar is doing okay though.
That's good. That's a great place.
Yeah.
And there's so many good Canadian comedians. First of all, Schitt's Creek is like a revelation, like an actual revelation of a show. It's nuts how funny that show is.
It's so good.
And they let Catherine O'Hara at this point in her career, just, they're like, hey, every time they pass her the ball, she dunks it. It's like the most incredible comedic consistency. But then, I love Deborah DiGiovanni. I love Mark Forward, and Robbie Hoffman has become a really great friend to me. Like, there's such a good scene in Canada, such a good scene. And so many others who I'm forgetting right now. Anyway, so you make out with sexy composer, francophone fiance, doesn't care. Right, fiance, you said.
Yeah, our plan was to elope. So my symphony was supposed to do a European tour this year. And our plan was to go and to elope in the conductor's backyard. Because I'm not going to say where he's from, but our conductor lives, he has a home in Europe. So that was our plan, was he was going to officiate and we were going to get married out there because I would have been his second wife.
Wow.
So I wasn't as special.
So as you described from the perspective that he's summoning you home and then won't speak a language that you understand when other people are around, and it sounds like it had some major flaws. And when he says he doesn't care about you making out, you say it leads to a conversation. So is there a discussion of like, well, is this an open thing or are you going, what are we doing here then?
Yeah. So I was like, I'm frustrated. I would like to try opening things up and like maybe Composer Man will just be my person who, like, when he's in town, we can have a good old romp. And then when he's not, we can pretend, we can still go to your snobby dinner parties and life can be normal. And so we did open up the relationship. My advice to anyone who is thinking about opening up their monogamous for years relationship is like, think about why you want to, because we should have just broken up. Like, we should have just kind of acknowledged, this has run its course. We're different people now. Let's just call it quits. But we didn't. We were afraid. I was afraid because I took a very significant pay cut to go from working in government to working for nonprofit, because I was like, I just wanted to do something I cared about. So suddenly my identity became my job, like the symphony. And I was working 80-hour weeks, and I thought I was happy because I was like, this is something, but I really wasn't because you, yeah. Anyway, so we opened up the relationship. I texted Sexy Composer Man. And I was like, our plan, you know, our plan kind of fell through to hook up because we both kind of felt weird about sleeping with a coworker. And it just didn't work out. But I did do stand up. He wasn't there, but I did do stand up. And my ex came to this little comedy club, which has illegally cheap drinks, but he came in like his suit from work just because he always needed to be the smartest person in the room. He always kind of wanted to be better than everyone else. And I couldn't really, well, I mean, I could see this when I was a little barista, but I just kind of did think he was better than me because I was making coffee. And I was like, wow, this kind of important person wants to spend time with me. But it, yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's really sad to look. I have jokes about this and they always kill. But when you take away the funny things that I'm saying, it's like, wow, this is actually like a really sad situation. But yeah, so I did stand up. I don't want to brag, but I crushed it.
Well, your first time you often do.
Yeah.
How'd that second time go?
It still went okay. So my first time doing stand-up was at like a women's open mic, which is like, you know, the energy in the room is always great. Like it's always just a party. It's like on Friday at like 8 o'clock, everyone's, you know, ready. But then you go to the other open mics and it's like Wednesday at 10.
Or, and like, everyone's just like 3 in the afternoon.
It's like, exactly.
Open mics can be like, the good ones can be like the best ways, like a fostering a community of people that are going to work together for years. And the worst ones are like, oh, this is the, this is the most grim environment I've ever been in. And many of these people here seem like they could be actual sociopaths. There's also those open mics and they're all lovely.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm in love. I am in love with all of them.
And you need, honestly, you need to do them. You cannot cut your teeth just doing the good open mics at the good times or like the shows that are guaranteed a huge turnout. You need to do those mics that make you question everything about yourself before you can, I think, before you can be successful.
Absolutely. And also, even in front of a good crowd, you're going to have a night. You're going to have a night where that good crowd looks at you cockeyed and goes, we don't know what you're talking about. And one thing I've always said about stand-up that's really kind of like so bizarre and that I think makes people scared of it is it's like, you wrote this material.
Yes.
And you're the one saying it. So when you bomb, it just honestly means that they have collectively decided that they do not like you. And that's what it really is. And you
that's what
feel
it means.
It. And sometimes you're doing 15 minutes and you go, oh, I'm 3 minutes in. And I can't walk away because that screws over the host is probably out at the bar getting a drink. And then if I end, they're going to have to run out in a panic and go, what's going on? And it's going to make the whole show look bad. So I guess I'm just going to have the 12 worst minutes of my month right now. And you have to do that. Point being, one thing that I think is a real struggle for a lot of artists, I mean, I can speak to the comedian experience. I imagine other arts have their version of this, is you got to go do those terrible rooms because they're always going to feel like that. And the reason you need, one of the many reasons you need to do them, I would say one of the biggest ones is because then when you're doing a show in front of 200 or 300 people and you bomb, you now know the skill of bombing. You know how to bomb gracefully. And that allows it to not completely destroy your ability to get up and try it again. You got to bomb.
Exactly.
You got to bomb more than you succeed in your early days because you better learn how.
Yes. And then once you've learned the skill of bombing and you can still look yourself in the mirror, then, you know, you're golden. Then you can make it through anything, in my opinion.
Well, can I tell you a secret about me 20 years in?
Yeah.
I don't tempt it, and I certainly don't crave it, but I also kind of love bombing. I kind of love it. It keeps you really humble, and it's also like I've done thousands of shows. I did one at the Comedy Cellar. I'd been going up there a bunch, and I'd been doing well, And I went up one night and it was the same jokes I had told there, you know, every night, going up there multiple times a week. And I was just met with confused, judgmental silence to the point where when I got off stage, the bouncer looked at me and was just like, yo, and like started laughing in my face. This is the guy you see all the time there. And I was like, you've seen me do those jokes. He's like, 100 times. He's like, I don't know what just happened, but you ate shit. And I was like, I know. And I kind of love that. Anyway, so you crush the other comedians there. They see it. They're probably psyched for you, I imagine.
They're psyched for me. The people who ran that venue saw me and they were like, please come back. So I was able to be pretty successful in my city. I haven't done like Just for Laughs. Like Deborah DiGiovanni would not know who I am, even though I absolutely worship her. Some, you know, some of the bigger Toronto comedians would know who I am just from coming to my town. But because they're like, and I mean, I know that I'm funny. This is like an ongoing battle. I know that I'm funny, but the reality is I'm one of maybe 5 or 7 women or non-binary performers who regularly do comedy.
In your town?
So I, in my town, not in the world. No,
not just, in the world.
Not in the...
You're one of those 5 women? Because I know who all 5 of the women that are allowed to do comedy are. Wow, that narrows
exactly.
It down. No, in your town. In your town in Canada.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm not in any of like... I'm not going to tell you where I am because it's the biggest small town kind of situation in the world. But I am in a city, in one of the bigger cities, in one of the middle provinces. So the dream for me, I was going to move to Toronto before the pandemic hit. But anyways, so I was able because, you know, I am funny, but the reality is you kind of need to check a box, which just feels awful. And it's a constant struggle in my mind.
When you say check a box, what do you mean? That, like you're saying that they want non-dude performers on the show, so it gives you opportunities, but you do feel like that's allowing somebody to like check their box and have their woke points. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Eh, fuck that. Who cares? Just go crush.
I really take that to heart. Thank you. But it's, you know, it is still kind of like, yeah, it's like definitely imposter syndrome, but yeah, I was able to do it a lot in my town really quickly. I'm only a couple years into doing stand-up and I've kind of hit the ceiling for what I can do here.
I want to say one more thing on this because I see where you're going and I love it. I love that you know you gotta take that jump and you can't be content with all that stage time. And when you go to Toronto, it's going to be much more of a fight to get stage time because of some of the things you said. And,
yeah.
you know all that. And I think you got to dive in and go for it. I think that that reflects really well on you. But I do want to say one other thing, which is when you go, you have imposter syndrome and this, that. First of all, I struggle with imposter syndrome to this day. 20 years in. And if you've okay. listened to the show for 10 minutes, you know that I just sit here and go, I don't think I deserve anything that I've ever gotten. And everything I've ever done, I'm sort of slightly ashamed of it, even though people love a lot of it. Like I say, I sit here and I beat myself up. But as far as checking a box goes, there's something to be said for in 20 years, do you know how many bills I've been on where there were no female performers? Certainly non-binary performers. Going back 20 years, do you know how many times there would be one female performer on a bill? And then even on days where they, you know, a night where a female performer really clicked with the crowd and then the host gets back up there and goes, what's she so angry about? It must be that time of the month.
Oh.
How many times I've seen that happen? So there's something to be said for imposter syndrome. There's something to be said for you are only a couple years in. You probably do feel in over your head. There are probably more experienced people who wonder why they aren't, who feel like you're skipping the line, and maybe you are. And all that being said, I will just encourage you to remember that I'm not trying to be overly woke or whatever, but I think it's just a fact of there's a lot of people who paved the way before you who really fought to carve out that space, who had a really bad time doing what we do, who had their names mispronounced, who always had to go first on the bill, who always had comments made about them, who got heckled with sexual stuff and no one in the no, the host didn't address it or protect them in any way. So also keep in mind that there are a lot of people who laid that track and fought hard for you to get more opportunities. And there's a lot, I think there's a lot of inspiration to be taken from that as well. End of rant. I'll get off the soapbox.
No, I appreciate it. And I totally know that. And it's, yeah, I try to remember that. And any, like, I've been pretty lucky that only a few times when someone has yelled something sexual at me when I'm performing, it's only been a few times where the host just doesn't address it. And now, like before the pandemic, I had my own room and I was just like, hey, I'm never letting that happen to anyone else. And so I think it's like, you know, it's a way that we all learn from the collective wisdom.
Yeah, but, you have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
So you're in this open thing with the sexy conductor, but you both feel weird about it. Coworkers, I'm sure also some weirdness of like this broke open this thing and we got to figure out how we feel about it and all that. How do you eventually break it off with the controlling Francophile? I asked how our caller broke it off with the controlling ex. So I'll go ahead and break off from the call. How do you like that for a segue? We're going to do some ads. We'll be right back. Okay, that's it. Last of the ads. Let's finish the phone call. How do you eventually break it off with the controlling Francophile?
Okay, so I had an extra week of vacation that I needed to use. And I have a ton of friends in Toronto. So he, Redacted and I just, we couldn't stop fighting. So I was like, look, I'm taking this week. I'm using your air miles. I'm going to Toronto.
Love it.
Still to this day, he has never, like, I have not given him a cent of money for that plane ticket. I have not reimbursed him air miles, whatever.
This is gleeful vindictiveness that we're hearing right here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I sometimes... Okay, there's a bookstore in my town that I love, and he had the rewards card that you have to pay for, and he hasn't moved from the home that we shared. So sometimes I'm like, oh, my partner is, he should have the rewards card. Can I just like use his name? And they're like, oh, is this the address? And I'm like, yeah. And then I get like $2 off my books. And I'm like, ha ha ha.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Anyways.
So, vacation, Toronto, fighting, relationships opened up. I have a feeling this is, I'm about to hear some notable stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I did kind of hook up with someone in Toronto, but my ex was still being really controlling, even from miles and miles away. And I just kind of knew every time I saw his name on my phone, because I think at this point, like he'd always had the upper hand in the relationship. And now I think he was feeling threatened because people were, I wasn't like a little mouse anymore. People were starting to notice me. So I think he felt threatened because I think he knew that he was probably close to losing me. So then he just freaked out and got really, really controlling. And every time I saw his name come up on my phone, like there isn't very much juicy stuff from Toronto, but every time I saw his name pop up on my phone, I'd be like, oh my God, I can't deal with you. And then we would fight and my poor friend who I was staying with just kind of had to like sit through it. And after the fight, be like, okay, like, do you want to go get a drink? And then I just like bitch. Sorry, Sally, about, this relationship. And so when I came home, my ex didn't come into the airport, and that's something he would have done before. He didn't come into the airport. He just parked as far away as he could. And he was like, this is where my car is. So I had to like drag all my luggage. And he like screamed at me the whole way home. And then when we got home, he was like, okay, either you stop seeing other people and we go back to the way things were before the symphony, or we're done. And I was like, we're done. You're treating me like business problem. It's done. Yeah.
He didn't say, I'll get to know this new you. I'm excited to see you finding yourself more. He said, revert. You just said, I'm not a little mouse anymore. He said,
yeah,
go back to being that mouse who ate my craft dinner and never questioned it. That's not the best strategy, dude.
No. Yeah. He, and I, it's, it's taken a lot of kind of reckoning with myself, but he just really couldn't care less about me. I think he just wanted to be in a relationship with someone he could have intellectual conversations with, but who didn't really go against anything he wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just not me anymore. Like it used to be, and it's taken me so much therapy. It's taken me AA to be able to stand on my own two feet. Like I was just kind of scattered and flailing, but yeah, like it was really scary because like I said, he made a lot of money. So we had, you know, our place had like a dishwasher. It had electricity that was not questionable. Like my current apartment.
Are you still in the marijuana mansion, by the way?
I'm not. I got my own place.
Okay. That's probably good. That's probably good. If you're embracing recent sobriety, I would have to imagine living in a marijuana mansion would be tough.
Yeah. And, you know, it has been really lonely to tell you the truth, because a lot of my friends are alcoholics, but they don't feel bad about it yet. Like I would, okay, I'm going to tell you my most embarrassing drunk tale. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It occurred at the marijuana mansion. One of the musicians I lived with was a trombone player. I was pretty drunk. I was pretty high. And I was like, you know, what's a good idea? To play the trombone tits out and just parade around the house. And so that's what I did. And I don't remember this, but there are stories. And then at that point, they just kind of like put me in a cab because I was still living with my ex at this point. But yeah, that's my most embarrassing drunk tale. It's the tale of the trombone titties.
Well, when you said there are stories, I let out a sigh of relief because I thought you were about to say there are pictures. And I could imagine that could be, that would have been. Even worse.
Yeah, I don't think there are pictures, but you know, if there are, that sucks. Yeah. And I hope that they get deleted. Yeah.
I remember having a few of those. There's a few of those.
Yeah.
Where my friends, I have very few people left in my life who have ever even seen me drunk. And a few of them just have these stories where I remember going, oh, that felt charming or funny or interesting in the moment. And I look back and realize that everyone there was just either worried about me or maybe pitying me a little bit. And those revelations are not easy to swallow.
No, they're not. Like, yeah, I hit bottom so many times before I stopped for good. And I kind of owe stopping for good to my, my middle-aged not boyfriend. But that's the only thing I will ever thank him for. But, yeah, it's just, you know, at a certain point, I just couldn't do it anymore. And I feel so much better. I don't feel like I'm scattered and flailing anymore, but it took a long time to get here. But yeah, I do have my own place. It's like, I'm really sorry if you can hear my radiators. They are so loud. It's a really old apartment building. Oh, good, because it sounds like a train. So that's really good. But yeah, it's like, and I don't think I'm the first person who sat through a pandemic in this building. It's like a tiny apartment. It's mine. I love it. But like our place was really nice. You know, I had a lot more spending money when I was living with my ex, a lot more security. Yeah. So it was really scary to take that jump, but I don't regret it. And now I was fortunate enough to be able to do a tour with a theater company. And do like, it was kind of stand up, but it was kind of, just like a one person piece about leaving him. I'm trying to make it into something that's 60 minutes long. Cause it was only like 15. So it was it was like a cabaret show. And I was able to tour it around, but there are a lot of women who came up to me who told me that I gave them confidence to like get out of a bad situation, which is so humbling and feels so good. Yeah. But yeah, no, I just was like, we're done. I was kind of, yeah, no.
I'll tell you something else though. And I can almost promise this is like, it's pretty clear that you think your current apartment sucks and you're comparing it to the old one and telling me about the radiators that sound like trains. And I feel like when you say you're not the first person to live through a pandemic here, that indicates that you think there were also people suffering in this place in 1918. but I bet I bet. I just encourage you to also take a deep breath and enjoy it and smile when you come home. And when those radiators are like blasting so loud, they wake you up at night. I hope you remember this and laugh, because I bet in 10 years, you're going to look back and go, living in that apartment was one of the best eras of my life. Based on what you're telling me you got out of and what you're headed towards right now, that's the best. It's the best. The frustrating,
young years.
The frustrating young years as an artist before you take that leap into the more intimidating scene, whether that's a new city or within your city, they're so stressful and confusing, but you're also living such a fun life, even though it's unmoored and there's no security. And I hope you enjoy it more than I enjoyed those times in my own experience. Because I would kill to be back in a bar drinking my ginger ale while my friends had their beers. All of us going, man, when are we going to get a job? When are we going to get a chance? What's happening here? Who's going home? Who wants to go find some food instead? Let's stay up all night and just wonder if we're going to ever make it. If I could take a time machine, I might go back to those conversations, those nights.
Yeah, it's kind of the best. It's the best. It really is. Like, I wouldn't trade this for a dishwasher with someone who couldn't care less about me ever again. Like, it is wonderful. Yeah.
I have to imagine, watching, this is preferable to watching people who don't like you eat expensive cheese. I have to imagine.
Yes, and criticize my IKEA furniture. IKEA makes a fine product and it shouldn't be criticized.
There you go. There you go. Don't judge. Don't judge.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, do I remember at the top of the call you saying that you had a more recent boyfriend who cheated on you?
Yeah. Okay. So I met him doing comedy. He came up to me after a show, and he was the first man who came up to me after a show who didn't also say, you know, my mom always told me I should do stand up. And it's like, okay, well then like do it then, you know, the open mic's on Wednesday. Like don't, I just did 20 minutes that I worked months and months and months to get. Do not talk to me this way. But he came up to me after the show and he was like, you're really funny. And I was like, man, this man is like a very sexy older man. And I'm into this. And we kind of danced around each other for a while. We became friends and then we started dating. So in the summer in Canada, it was kind of back to normal where I am. Like there was the odd case here or there, but it was pretty much normal. So we started dating. He kind of just stopped going home. I thought I loved him. I'm realizing now that I'm sober, I don't think I did. I don't think it was true love. I think it was a really deep infatuation, but he would be over here 6-7 nights a week. And he was like, I'm just not ready to be in a relationship. And I was like, oh, this tortured soul, I can be here for you. But it was just kind of bullshit, even though like we did have some really good times. But, so we went to my family cabin together in October, just us, like my family wasn't there. And, I thought it was going to be like a really nice getaway, but then it it just got too real for him. We had our first mutual orgasm when we were doing sex to each other. And, it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life, but it terrified him. And so like the next day we came home and he was just like, I can't do this. I was so heartbroken. And then I found out recently that he called this other girl who's been his side chick for like 6 years. Like anytime he's bored with his current situation, he kind of calls her, which is horrible. But then he got me back, but he was seeing both of us for like a month or two. And this girl had no idea who I was. He would talk about his friend who worked for the symphony and who was a comedian, but he used a man's name when he would talk about me. And I never heard about her. So I just found this out 2 weeks ago. And I'm really glad to have found it out 2 weeks ago, because the last time I drank was at the cabin with him. And if I found out, yeah, if I found out I wouldn't be sober like earlier in my sobriety, because the first 90 days are just impossible. And I just made it over that. So I'm really glad to have found out now and to be strong enough now to know that. But also, like, I mean, he also lied to me about the woman he was dating when he and I met. He told me he was so unhappy and they were broken up, but he was just living there out of necessity. And I was like, yeah, I understand that. But they were like going to couples counseling and trying to figure it out. And I was opening for a pretty big headliner. And he told me that this girl had, or this woman had read his phone and bought tickets on purpose to like try to freak me out at this show. But the reality is, I actually talked to this woman too. And the reality is, she just liked the comedian I was opening for. She had no idea who I was.
Oh, and but then he was like, he's sitting there shitting his pants. He's sitting there shitting his pants like, oh, you want to see this headliner and I know the opener is someone who I've been playing this game with both of you. Oh.
Yeah. So like, I don't know how many other people there were. I gave him a key to my place because it just kind of made sense after a while. And I don't know what happened when I was at work. Really unsettling to hear that. It's not really funny, but well, what is funny is like, if he ever tries to show his face again, it's going to be the roast of him, because he was around enough that everyone kind of knew who he was. And there are jokes about him, like I nicknamed him Hot. I'll use like a fake first name, like, so Hot Lloyd is here, and then one of the comedians has a joke that's like, oh, that's regular Lloyd, like, to the rest of us. And it's always so funny. But yeah, it's gonna be a roast when he comes back, I think, or hopefully not. I don't know. I just like, he also struggles with addiction, so I really wish him the best. I hope he gets help, but like, yikes, it's not fun to be I don't know if use is the right word, but it probably is.
Well, to be deceived or to be like,
yeah,
a pawn in this guy's weird game that he's decided to play without you knowing about it. It's wild. Yeah. It's wild too, within the same hour, to go, I hear about you making out in a bathroom with the sexy conductor under circumstances where, I mean, and you said, you told him, I feel horrible about this.
Yeah.
But then you ultimately go, oh, this was a person who was kind of being kicked around and needed some empowerment. And that was a step in that. And then you hear, oh, and then here's this dark side where this guy was like playing a game and manipulating, and just seeing how every situation is so different and how things are never black and white, you know?
Oh, never, 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 never. Yeah. It's, yeah, I'm just, yeah, I do hope he gets help. I hope that he stops deceiving people. But yeah, it's pretty heartbreaking. And okay, so I had this pan. It was the perfect grilled cheese pan. It was beautiful. It made the perfect grilled cheese in like 5 minutes. It just understood bread, this pan that has no thoughts or feelings. It just knew bread.
Okay.
And I loved this pan. And I think that he stole it after we left each other. Cause I let, you know, he left stuff here. So I was like, go get your thing.
He stole your pan. How much older, how much older than you was he?
15 years.
15 years.
I'm still pretty young.
What petty bullshit for an old man to pull off.
I know.
So wait, if you're in your mid-20s, he's like my age?
Yeah, he's 42.
Oh God, a 42-year-old man who's like, you wouldn't break up with me, I'll take your fucking pan.
Yeah. He took my pan.
Hot Lloyd.
Yeah.
Hot Lloyd, pan thief.
Hot Lloyd. I know. He lived in a hippie commune when we met. Like, it's quite the tale. But he was a sexy musician too. I have a weakness, and it's sexy musicians. And okay, so I did rekindle things with an old flame recently who is also a sexy musician, but things are going a lot better. And I thought we were just rekindling a friendship, and now it's turned romantic, but it's been good. But sexy musicians, I'm powerless over alcohol and sexy musicians.
Is the new sexy musician that you've rekindled with also older?
He's a little bit older. Yes, but
you got a type.
You know,
you got a type.
Oh, I have raging daddy issues, Chris. Like, I think to myself, why do I love old men who treat me badly and don't stick around? And it's like, oh, dad, that's why. That's unfair. My dad did the best he could with what he had. But I do have a type. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the last time I dated someone who is my age, I saw his bedroom and like almost immediately broke up with him because it was just a naked mattress a dirty blanket. That's what his bed was. There was a smell. I was like, I can't be your mommy. Like I need to go find me a daddy.
I got to tell you.
Farewell.
We only have 2 minutes left, so I'll rush through this, but
oh no.
My whole thing when I was single was like, I'm this artist and I need, you know, I wasn't playing a game, but there was truth. Like, I don't really have my shit together. And that's kind of what's compelling about my material. And when people see me, they're in, but then like a lot of people I dated would be put in a position where they'd come over and it would be like, yeah, I'm so fucked up. My mattress is on the floor and I have a duvet that doesn't have a cover and my house. And then when the first time my now wife slept over, I was so humiliated and she had her shit together so much that the second time she slept over, she like laughed at me and her heart melted because I had a duvet cover and all these shams and throw pillows and all my posters that had been thumbtacked to the wall were now in frames. And it was like six days later and I completely did a home makeover. So I was like, oh, feel pathetic. This does not feel charming with this woman. Like this, there's no charm or romance to the New York artist's sad life. Like I was like, oh, she's not buying that bullshit. I need to get a sham.
Yeah. I'm so glad you did.
Yeah. And I went to the Bed Bath and Beyond and this, like, it was in Queens and this very like just total, the romantic cliche of like an older New York Jewish woman saw me in the Bed Bath and Beyond in a panic and was like, "Hun, you look like you need some help. What can I do?" And I was like, "I need a duvet cover." She's like, "Get this one. She'll find it classy but masculine." I was like, "Oh, okay, okay. What's the difference between a throw and a sham?" Anyway, I'm talking too much. This call has been, I felt so comfortable talking to you, and we've been laughing about some hard stuff. And I want to just say that I'm so happy that you're sober. I'm so happy that you're finding some art to be a compelling thing that's helping you feel empowered and not like a little mouse anymore. And there's so many similarities to the path I walked 20 years ago. And it's given me great joy to see that you're finding some of those same positives. Really is.
Thank you. And like, your comedy has really gotten me through some really tough times. You've been a huge inspiration to me. So my dream of dreams is that we do Just for Laughs together one day. I'll open for you.
I would love that. But my career is definitely on a downturn. So I hope Just for Laughs will even have me back. We'll see.
They'll even consider who I am.
Yeah. I mean, more likely I'll be like, hey, do you want to come open for me in Prince Edward, you know, Newfoundland in February. Like that, it'll be more like that, you know?
I mean, it'd be warmer than where I live. So I would be
really
there in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah. It's minus 30 Fahrenheit today.
What? I will not be coming there. What? Minus 30?
Yep.
What are you talking
about? Yeah,
with
the wind chill.
How are people alive?
You just bundle. And you know, Jesus, take the wheel on cold days like today. Seriously. That's why my radiator sounds like a train.
Okay. Time's up. I wish you nothing but success and happiness.
Thank you. I wish the same. Well, I mean, I wish the same for you. Yeah. This meant so much to me. Thank you. My dad is a good person. Please make a disclaimer. My dad is a good person.
Your dad's not going to be upset at what he heard. It was a joke. And you said he did the best with what he had. And I feel like as a dad now, I feel like that's actually high praise for any dad. And next time I'm in Canada, I don't know who you are, but maybe we'll figure out a way to do a show together. That would be cool.
That would be amazing.
Caller, thank you so much for calling in, letting us know about your life. I hope that you stay healthy and happy and that all of your dreams come true and you crush them and that you remember me on the way when I need a gig. Thank you so much for calling, and thank you to Anita Flores, who this show is produced by.
It's engineered by Jared O'Connell. Our theme song is by Shell Shag. Go to chrisgeth.com if you want to know more about me, including my tour dates. I'm getting back out on the road, 20 cities, 2021. Wherever you're listening, you can hit subscribe, favorite, or follow. It really helps us when you do. Find our latest merch at podswag.com. We've got mugs, shirts, posters, and more. Find ad-free episodes of Beautiful Anonymous and other great shows, including WTF with Mark Maron, over at Stitcher Premium. Use the promo code STORIES for a 1-month free trial at stitcher.com/premium.